Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian. It is a busy Wednesday in the MMA world. We currently have a UFC fight night going on as we tape this right now. So that's going on Fight Island in Abu Dhabi. And then this Saturday, Conor McGregor's return is a big one as he faces Dustin Poirier. So a lot of hype surrounding this one. The money line keeps trickling up. We're going to talk about that with Matthew Holt coming up in a little bit. So no Lou, he's unavailable this week with our taping window. So it's just going to be Matthew and I. Matthew has a few plays there. But first, we get the big debut here on the podcast of Ariel Helwani. Obviously, all people listening to this podcast certainly know him. MMA insider, has his own pod. Get him on the pod when you have such a big hype fight like this one with McGregor and Poirier. And so we're going to get his opinion. We're talking a little football as well. It's a fun chat with him. And I've talked about it a lot, especially with our NFL analysts. Like, I miss seeing the guy so much on campus. So it's great to connect with Ariel. And then tomorrow, the Thursday, will be our NFL pod going into Championship Sunday as before we get our Super Bowl matchup all set. So before we get into today's episode, I want to quickly remind you that Conor McGregor returns to the Octagon January 23rd in a rematch against Dustin Poirier at UFC 257, only on ESPN Plus. UFC 257 is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $69.99. Visit ESPNplus.com/pay-per-view. Also, we have a brand new ESPN podcast launching this week. You know about First Take, but how about First Take Her Take? This new podcast is hosted by Charlie Arnold, Kimberly Martin, and Shanae Ogumike. They discuss and debate the biggest sports stories and delve into topics about their lives and culture. Subscribe, rate, and review First Take, Her Take, as well as Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian, wherever you get your podcast.
You using the whole fist, Doc?
Time now to welcome in a man who is basically directly associated with MMA. And when you think UFC, you also think Ariel Helwani making his debut here on the Behind the Bets podcast. Ariel, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, Doug. I've been wondering, honestly, when you're going to have me on the pod. You don't have me on your show. You don't call. You don't text. You don't write me. All these things and more. So it's a great honor to finally be on the show. I guess it's a big week when I finally get the call.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for, because we will certainly abuse that request. We love all your content. Obviously, the podcast that many of our listeners currently also know, the DC and the Helwani podcast, but you are synonymous with MMA, so I wanted to get you on for a special occasion, not just waste your presence on something, because when Conor McGregor returns, it's big.
Wait, and you don't want me on to talk about the Bills, my beloved Buffalo Bills? I thought that's what this was. We were talking about the Bills today.
Do you like them plus the three?
Do I like them plus the three? I'd like them if they were a minus 21. How about that? All right.
Bills Mafia is so pumped for this.
Pumped is an understatement. I've been waiting for this for 26 years. I know you didn't have me on to talk about my Bills fandom, but I've been a fan since 1990. I'm very excited. I just hope this can continue for two more games.
Well, that's about when the Bills broke my heart as a Raider fan, when they went in there and just got absolutely smoked.
What was
at the
it,
Ralph.
Like 41-3 or something like that?
I think it was 51-3, I think, if I remember. Quick question though. How tough is it going to be on Sunday I was thinking Saturday. Duh. How tough was it last week? Saturday. Yeah. Is it just, you got the time difference and everything worked out in your favor?
Okay. So I was so nervous about this because first of all, it was a really big weekend for MMA because it was the UFC's debut on ABC. Right. So that was a huge deal. And I thought for sure, just given how the first week went, that the Bills would get the first slot. You know, they got the first slot against, Indy. And so I thought that we would get, what was it? I think it was 4-7, something, give or take a few. And so I'm on the East Coast here and I was like, oh no, the ABC, the main event is going to go up against the Bills. I'm a nervous wreck when they're playing. This is horrible. And luckily we got the 8 o'clock slot. So the main event was done by 6. I had some writing to do after. I was done by 7. Got changed, put on my Thurman Thomas jersey, sat in front of my television and saw them beat down the Baltimore Ravens. Taron Johnson taking it home, pick 6. Josh Allen doing his thing. Yes, he was a little bit overhyped and, you know, a couple of overthrows here and there, but they got the job done. Going to Arrowhead, I cannot wait. And I am very, very nervous for Sunday. So it's going to be a big weekend, get through the Connor fight, and then I'll be home watching on Sunday afternoon later.
Yeah, you should be nervous. You're a Bills fan. That's what comes with the territory. But I think all fans are nervous, obviously, in the storyline. So it should be fun. I like both teams. So I'm rooting.
Can I ask?
I don't know yet. No, I don't know yet. I got to think about the Mahomes thing. But I said, right. Someone asked me before the playoffs, what's your Super Bowl? And I think Packers versus Bills. I do think.
Really? You said that at the beginning?
Oh, the playoffs, not the season, but the playoffs. Because I think there's something a little off with this Chiefs team.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Like just another smart person in sports saying that gives me chills. Like the fact that the Bills could be going to the Super Bowl against a very good Packers team blows my mind. Cause as you know, it's been a tough two decades. So thank you.
Man. No, I appreciate it. I think the Bills are legit. They certainly are. And obviously the people on this podcast know them. They were 11-5 in the regular season, tied for the best record against the spread. So surpassing expectations is what that means. And then it's closed strong. I think 8 straight covers to close the regular season. So they're good. I mean, Josh Allen, it's going to be interesting to see how the injury and all that plays out. Even if he does play, like I'm not optimistic he plays.
Really? I feel like this is all just a ruse. Like they're just trying to work.
The concussion protocol is interesting. Remember Andy Dalton? Now he got like nuked and then he didn't play the next game. So it's going to be interesting how it all pans out because the independent people who are like, they have to pass all these, the 5-step protocol. So it's really unknown what exactly is going to happen.
And can I just think say, we're I'm assuming not that he's going to play. I'm not rooting for this. I would never root for that. I'm part of Bills Mafia. We want to play the best team possible. I was rooting for the Chiefs. I didn't want the Browns. That was the easy way out. I want a healthy Chiefs team. And I want a healthy Pat Mahomes, who, by the way, his father, former reliever for my beloved Montreal Expos. I'm going totally in the other direction of what you really wanted me to talk about here, but I'm using this opportunity because they don't let me talk about sports any other time. So yes, I have a lot of love for Patrick Mahomes.
Was Mahomes on those that sweet Expos team that got strike shortened season?
No, he was actually a funny story. If you indulge me, 2004 final season in the Expos existence, I'm a senior at Syracuse University and I'm applying for a visa to remain in the United States and work. If you don't get this visa and you're an international student, you have to go back to your home country. While this visa is processing, you can't go back home. You can't leave the country. You can't leave the States. So this coincided with spring break. So I couldn't go home for spring break. I had nothing to do. I didn't really have a lot of friends. So I'm like, what am I going to do? You know what I did? I wrote a letter to the Montreal Expos, who we all suspected were playing in their final season in Montreal. And I told them that my student station at Syracuse was assigning me to cover their final spring training. Now, this was a total lie. No one was assigning me to cover the Expos. Why would anyone assign me to cover the Expos? But I made up the letter. They accepted because no one was covering the Expos at that point. And I flew to Melbourne, Florida during spring training, went to Space Coast Stadium over there and spent the week covering quote unquote the Expos. I got to talk to Frank Robinson and Omar Minaya, all the players. And Pat Mahomes Sr. was a reliever on that team. And guess what? I went back and last year I was home in Montreal. I looked at my I kept a journal while I was there. And at one point I write Pat Mahomes. I called him Pat Mahomes in the journal because we didn't know senior junior. I wrote his son is eating popcorn with Frank Robinson in the dugout right now. That was Pat Jr., the quarterback for the Chiefs. So I was on the same field as him. He was just like 6 or 7 years old at the time. How about that?
It's funny you say that because they say, or I've read that like that experience just being kind of like in the clubhouse, the spotlight has kind of made him such like a grounded person and sort of like handling success. I actually met him at the Super Bowl party a couple of years ago. When he started the week 17 game. So before he was going to get the keys to the offense the following year. And he was so pumped and he was like very like just grounded and down to earth and just an awesome guy. And he was very complimentary of the offense and all the bells and whistles they had. So that's awesome that you had your notes and you went back and checked it out because those pictures have also surfaced of him as a little kind of like the Prince Fielder. Stuff surfacing. Although Pat Mahomes is a little bit smaller than Prince Fielder.
And better.
Yes. At his respective sport. So, all right, man. Well, good. I'm glad you're fired up. I hope it's a fun weekend for you. And just, you know, wishing well on all the Bills Mafia and the Chiefs fans, too, because I know they got the Super Bowl last year, but they're a diehard bunch that's been
their championship, all right?
They got their title. So let's talk about Conor McGregor because, you know, they used to say this about Tiger Woods. He doesn't move the needle. He is the needle. Mm-hmm. Conor's not as big as Tiger was to golf, obviously. but he certainly resonates. The gates show that, the pay-per-views, and the handle does as well. Where is Connor right now? Because we've only seen him fight once in the octagon. We obviously saw him not too long ago in a boxing match with Floyd Jr. But where is he, like, in terms of, like, close to his peak performance?
Okay, so that's a good question. It's obviously the question everyone wants to know. Like, going into the Cerrone fight last year in January, there were a lot of questions surrounding him because he had not fought in MMA since October of 2018. He had not won since 2016. He had a hellacious 2019, all kinds of legal issues, accusations, in and out of court, all that stuff. And we were wondering, what's going on with this guy? Like, did he just blow it? Is he never going to return to his old self? Because when he was on fire in 2015 and 2016, he was one of the best fighters I'd ever seen, regardless of era, regardless of weight class. And so he comes back and he completely wrecks Donald Cerrone at 170 pounds, which I don't think is his natural weight class. 155 is much better for him. And then he told us he was going to fight at least three times in 2020. And he had the plans to fight Pacquiao in a boxing match and all this stuff. And of course the pandemic happens and everything gets derailed, but he was hoping to come back in July, in September, in November, but he was butting heads with the UFC. So when I spoke to him last week, I thought that I was going to get a Connor who was very irritated, upset, wanted to get some things off his chest. He had not done any media since last January, a year ago, feeling like he was shelved, all this stuff disrespected. Instead, I got the complete opposite. I got probably the most relaxed Connor I've ever talked to. And I've been covering him since 2013 before his UFC debut. You know, usually when you talk to him, he's sitting in his chair. He's got impeccable posture. He's intense. You know, he's just kind of different kind of cat when you speak to him. This time he was slouched in his chair. He was wearing slippers. He was very calm, cool, and collected, very, very relaxed. And, that was a different side. I'd never seen him that relaxed before. His son was running around. His fiance was around as well. He just seemed to be in a really great place. And I was wondering also about the cut to 155, because this fight against Poirier is at 155. He has not cut to 155 since 2018. And usually that brings its own level of irritation as well. You know, you're ornery, you're hungry, all that stuff. He was not at all. Obviously he looks a little different. His face is a little, you know, thinner and whatnot, but he told me the cut was going great. Everything was going great. And yes, I know people say this before fights, best camp ever, all that stuff, but it really does feel like everything's coming together for him. And it also feels like the storm is behind him. And it feels like he has figured out how to be famous and he got all that stuff out of his system. And now he's really trying to do a lot of good for his community and be a role model and whatnot. So, you know, we'll see what happens on Saturday, but if you're a Connor fan and you watch that, I think you'd have to feel pretty good about where he's at right now.
You know, it's interesting. Like you said, there's a lot of, you know, talk along those lines for various fighters going into fights, boxing, UFC, whatever. And it's just, you know, lip service, if you will. But if someone, I mean, look, fame is hard, I would imagine, for Conor McGregor. So anyone, they talk about child actors. So just later in life, but if you're, I mean, maybe fatherhood has changed him. Maybe, like you said, the storm is behind him. There's something to that. I mean, people change, obviously, at any age, but just in those kind of certain years and when fame kind of takes over. I guess my question to you is that a good thing, like, for fighting? Like, you know, if the edge was so much part of what makes him, like, guys like Mayweather never changed, right? And I wonder, sometimes they can channel that and make some just intense in workouts and intense fighter. So does that make him more likely to lose or less likely?
Okay, so I will offer this, not to correct you. I do think Mayweather changed. I think early on we saw Pretty Boy Floyd and he realized that guy wasn't getting over, and then we got Money Mayweather, right? So I do think he changed a little. I mean, obviously his skills were the same. He evolved, he got better. For Connor, I think most people would agree the Connor that fought Khabib Nurmagomedov in October of 2018 wasn't the best version of himself. The buildup to that fight was ugly, and I think it brought out the worst in him. It was way too personal. And yes, trash talk and all this stuff is a part of the fight game, but this was on a whole other level, talking about family, religion, and all that stuff.
Sure.
Then you see him against Donald Cerrone. He was in a great spot mentally, physically, and look what he did, 40-second knockout. You see him now against Poirier. He's in a great spot. We'll see what it translates into. But I don't think that this man needs to be supremely fired up. He is so intense. He is so obsessed, as he puts it, with fighting and with being the best ever and all this stuff. I think he's beyond the rivalry and the feud and the trash talk and the hype. Like, he just brings his own level of hype. Connor versus a broomstick, in my opinion, does over a million buys alone. He's just that big of a deal. So I don't think he needs that anymore to get up. I think early on when he was climbing the ladder, he was going after Jose Aldo and all these guys. Yeah, he needed that. He needed to poke the bear. He doesn't need to do that anymore. And I think him being in a good spot is actually better for him as a result.
Okay, good. And then maybe clear minds, kind of like the chess component of UFC.
Exactly.
Maybe that will make him operate more effectively. So often we hear the phrase path to victory. These fighters are obviously both very different from when they last fought 2014. Poirier, is this, I mean, look, they're going to probably stand in the middle here, but I would imagine his path to victory is later rounds on the ground, or is Connor's conditioning really that much better?
Okay, so that's the big question. Like, his conditioning, his cardio, his gas tank, whatever you want to call it, has always been his Achilles heel. People think that, you know, he was exposed against Nate Diaz. He can't go into the later rounds, the championship rounds. Historically, he hasn't done that. He got submitted by Khabib in the fourth round, et cetera, et cetera. He maintains everything's changed. He's fixed it. He's ready to go 30 minutes, whatever. You know, we'll see. I agree with your notion. If you told me right now that you've seen the fight, but you can't tell me the winner, and it went 25 minutes, then I'd say, yeah, maybe there's a great chance that Dustin won the fight. And you told me, you know, you saw the fight, it lasted a round. I would say, yeah, Connor probably knocked him out. I think it's going to be a longer fight than the first fight, which only lasted a minute 46, but I don't think it goes the distance. I just don't see that happening. I think Dustin, you know, obviously he has power. He's tough. He takes damage. You know, he doesn't mind getting into a firefight, if you will. Connor's a lot more precise and usually, you know, comes out unscathed from his fights. So I'm curious to see what happens. Connor told me that, you know, he welcomes a quote unquote war. He also said a war to me might be something different than, you know, what he thinks a war is. But his official prediction was 60 seconds or less. You know, that would be incredible considering how good Poirier is and how much better he is than the first time they fought. But I don't think it'll be 60 seconds. I don't think it'll be 25 minutes. And I don't think it will necessarily be a war. I think someone will get knocked out in the first two rounds or so. I don't know if there's like an over under on rounds, but if it's at three or something like that, I would take the under.
Yeah, no, I'm going to go look it up. It's probably 1.5. Sometimes it's either 1.5 or 2.5. So I'm actually going to take
that's an interesting
try
one
to
then.
Look that up, to be honest. I'll answer your question when we rejoin, if you will.
Okay.
I'm just like, it'll take me like 10 seconds. I should have had this at my disposal.
No problem.
They don't usually put up the over-unders yet until, okay, so it is 2.5, but, you know, juice to the under, minus 190. Okay. So it is 2.5.
I have no idea what you just said. Juice okay. to the under? What the hell does that mean?
So it's favored to go under, so minus oh. so 2-1. 1-2 would be gotcha. Minus 200, so 190 is like 1.9. So.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it is 2.5 rounds. Sometimes we see 1.5s in these like Shamaya fights and some of the ones that are expected to be so quick. But usually they're 2.5 and then they just move the juice. So it's about 1-2. So it's minus 190. So it's about 1-2 favorite to be under 2.5 rounds. So 12.5 minutes.
Yeah. So, like they're pretty much saying exactly what I'm saying there. Right. And then the big question is, if that's the case, I would go with the under.
I would too. I think
that's a safer bet.
You know, I got to do this for the show. I joke about just like things that are the most miserable to bet on, like Steph Curry unders, like his points prop or something, just because he can catch fire and it's just miserable to like watch him every play and run around and get open and shoot a three. You're just, like a soccer over, you know, it's like another one. You're just like, oh my God, they're never going to score. And then I think UFC unders is just, UFC overs are just so painful because one punch, you know, you can be looking good and they're like grappling against the fence and all of a sudden a guy's choking the other guy out and then one haymaker and then, So betting under is much more enjoyable to root for than an over in mixed martial arts.
Yeah, I could see that as well. I guess if you were to equate it to football, I feel like the over would be much more fun, right? Like you just want.
Oh yeah, overs are fun. Yeah. I just think the other ones are so miserable. Just like sweating out an over, you're just like every second could like end, right? Like in boxing, like it doesn't really end with one punch. It occasionally does, but. The UFC, man, it's just like you can be riding and then all of a sudden one punch just catches a guy on the jaw or even the temple, so to speak, and it's lights out.
I could be putting you on the spot here, and I apologize if I am, but you know, I'm new to all this betting stuff. Mm-hmm. I find it fascinating. My friend who works for ESPN, he runs the ESPN MMA social handles, New York Rick. He's brilliant when it comes to this, and he's taught me a lot. Eric Jackman is his real name. You mentioned something about the Bills being 11-5 with the spread, right? Mm-hmm. Am I saying that mm-hmm. correct? Yeah. I wonder what Connor is like. Like historically, does he?
So it's all money lines, right? So it's all just straight wins or losses. So is he performing at the rate? So you can convert all these money lines to percentages, and that's a good question, especially for our audience. So let's just use that. Let's just say Connor right now. Let's just say he's 337 right now where I'm looking. Let's just say it's $3. So that's a 75% chance of winning. So do you think Connor has better than a 75% chance to win?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
I say so. Yeah.
Okay. So 337 is 77.1% to be exact.
Okay.
So, and that's how you evaluate. So actually the last five fights, he's actually only 3-2. So he's actually lost money because he was a -400 favorite to Nate Diaz, which is 80%. So -$4 is in correlation to 80%. So that's where you have to like determine value. So the last five times he's actually been a net loser, but before that, he obviously was 19-2 before the Nate Diaz loss. So he certainly rewarded bettors, and so he's been profitable, just not the last run, especially when his money lines were so high.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
So you think he's that? So because I thought the price opened like Connor almost -200. So a 67% favorite. And then it just got bet up, and it probably will continue to bet up because of his popularity.
Yeah, I think that's what historically happens. Yeah, I mean, look, I think you can't ignore what happened the first time around. I think Connor is the master of mind games. I think it's going to be really interesting. Sometimes, you know, the pre-fight press conferences are just whatever, they're duds. But when it comes to Connor, he's always thinking. And when you saw him against Cerrone, he tried to disarm him, and he was very, very friendly towards him. And I thought that was brilliant because Cerrone gets up for like, you know, the heated fights, but sometimes he kind of sleepwalks through the other fights. And I thought that was very calculated on Connor's part this time around. And oh, by the way, Cerrone, like I remember watching him at the pre-fight press conference last year, and he was banging on the table and telling everyone how excited he was to be there and how they're going to have this firefight and all this stuff. And when I watched him, I was like, oh, this fight's over, because he's just convincing himself right now. He's trying to psych himself up. Oh, also he was wearing this hat. Like he looked like the Undertaker covering his eyes. Like it just felt like he didn't want to be there. By the way, several months later, he admitted that he just didn't want to be there for lack of a better, summation of his thoughts. But that's basically what he said. He said he just kind of buckled under the pressure. Now on Thursday, they're going to have the press conference. I'm really curious to see what happens there because of their, you know, their demeanors and how, and leading up to this fight, Connor has been, I think, disarming Dustin as well, saying he's going to, you know, donate to his charity $500,000. Now, I think that's genuine. I don't think that's part of the mind games per se, but if you compare this vibe leading up to the second fight, as opposed to the vibe leading up to the first fight, it's completely different. The first fight, Dustin was very upset. There was a lot of trash talk, a lot of back and forth. This time it's all buddy-buddy stuff. And it reminds me a little bit of the Cerrone fight. And historically, Dustin, you know, it has been said, gets a little psyched out for the big fights. Lost to Khabib, lost to Connor when there was a lot at stake. So those are a couple of famous examples. So he has a lot of pressure to try to, you know, rewrite that narrative. And I'm curious to see how Connor plays with him or not leading up to the fight on Saturday.
Yeah, no, that is always interesting. I know, I remember Bernard Hopkins a long time ago told me after a fight, he's like, man, we're just trying to sell pay-per-views. And then sometimes it matters. Sometimes there's a reason behind stuff, but usually we're just trying to stir the pot, which is fine. I mean, look, sometimes it's genuine, sometimes it's not, some of the animosity, but I love that there's a calculation with Connor in your eyes on previous situations. We'll see the new Connor, what he does here. But Ariel, I can't thank you enough to talk a little football, talk a little UFC as well. And we're going to get you on the show soon on Daily Wager and back here on the pod, hopefully.
Anytime. Sorry for hijacking the show.
Oh, please.
I'm very excited. I'm sorry. What can I say? It's a very special time, but keep up the great work. The set looks great. The stuff that you're doing is great. Very avant-garde. I remember when I saw you, when I first joined ESPN, and you know, you were talking about all this stuff. So it's really great to see it all come to fruition. I wish you the best.
Thank you. That's very kind. I remember when you first started too, we were chatting in the parking lot. It was really cool. Just that's the one thing I honestly really miss the most about Connecticut and being able to be on campus and just interacting. I say this when we bring on NFL analysts, just how awesome it is to pick the brains of people in the hallway and really bother them and ask them questions about the upcoming weekend slate of games and to see people like yourself and stuff. So I appreciate you saying that. And hopefully we'll all connect at a fight soon when everything calms down and order is restored and we can have a share a few laughs octagon side.
Amen. I look forward to it. Thank you.
All right, man. Thank you again and good luck to your Bills.
Thank you very much.
Go pick me out a winner, Bobby.
All right, time now to break down this card even further as we bring back Matthew Holt from hiatus. Matthew, how are you, my man?
Happy New Year, my friend.
I know, right? It's good to get that little break with the UFC and quite the return we have for the podcast with Conor McGregor stepping back into the octagon with Dustin Poirier. So, you know, it sounds like you and I talked before, and it sounds like you and I are on the underdog here, Poirier, just because the price has gotten out of hand. Just for me, at least, explain why you like the dog here.
You know, for me, Doug, it's not just the value in the line in Dustin Poirier. It's the activity of these two fighters. Being active is so important. And Dustin Poirier is a guy who trains at one of the best gyms in the world. We don't have to question his drive, his passion, his enthusiasm for the sport. This is a guy who's gone 6-1-1 since 2017, fighting 8 times in that span with wins over some of the best fighters in the world, including Max Holloway, Justin Gaethje, Eddie Alvarez, Dan Hooker, Anthony Pettis. His only loss in that span, undefeated lightweight champion Khabib Nurmagomedov. This is a guy who really is at the top of his game right now. And on the other side, since 2017, Conor McGregor, just 2 fights. The inactivity continues to plague McGregor. 1 short, 1 minute fight against an aging cowboy Cerrone, and a fight against Khabib Nurmagomedov in which that fight was completely one-sided. And it's been over a year since he fought again. While Dustin Poirier had that epic fight of the year contender in June against Dan Hooker, Conor McGregor has been on the shelf again for a year since that Cowboy Cerrone fight. Now add in another multi-million dollar lawsuit just filed this week against McGregor, and the distractions outside the octagon continue to mount for a fighter who hasn't seemed to have the same passion and drive since getting that big payday versus Floyd Mayweather. I think if this fight was a pick'em and you forced me to bet it, I would probably lean Poirier. At this price, it's a no-brainer for me.
Wow, that's quite the statement. So you would take him even in a pick'em. That's impressive. We talked to Ariel Helwani earlier, and he really liked like everything Conor's saying. Like he felt like it's a more relaxed Conor, like a different McGregor, and that certainly can be the case. We've seen fighters sort of evolve in combat sports across, you know, over the years, and it would be interesting to see, but he just feels like McGregor's in like a healthy place, so to speak, right? Mindset. The over under is 2.5. The under is about $2, give or take some 10 cents here and there. It's tough for me to think this one goes over, but you know, it's also heavy juice there.
Yeah, and you're right. It is heavy juice. And let's face it, Conor McGregor doesn't get knocked out. This is a tough guy who will stand and take shots. Seen him take shots in fights before. And on the other side, Dustin Poirier is a warrior. We've seen him in fight after fight with Justin Gaethje, with Max Holloway, even the Dan fight. I think that round 1 or 2, the round of the year 2020, and he stands there and takes shots. Now, granted, both of these guys hit really hard. So at the end of the day, if they're just standing and trading, it's not likely to go over. But I still think that both these guys are really tough. And at plus 180, plus 170, would I rather have the over rather than the under? I think if forced, I would take the over. I could see this being a KO3, KO4, maybe even a cumulative damage situation. But they are going to stand and trade. So bet the over at your peril, certainly.
Interesting. Okay. So, you're going to play contrarian a little bit on that front. The next fight on the card is really interesting. Chandler and Hooker, and this is your top play. So I'll just give you the floor here.
Yeah, I really like this play a lot. Look, Michael Chandler, I'm one of those guys that way back in the day, Michael Chandler versus Eddie Alvarez, I became one of those guys that like, oh my God, Bellator is awesome. Michael Chandler and Eddie Alvarez are cult heroes. Guys are the best. And after that Eddie Alvarez epic fight really changed the history of Bellator. We're talking about a Chandler who went on to whip then former UFC pride and pain craze legend Akihiro Gono, followed it up by being, you know, David K. Rickles, who at the time was an up-and-comer, Rick Hahn. I mean, Chandler was amazing. But then since then, he went 9-5 in Bellator, and he went 9-5 against competition that wasn't necessarily the best. He lost twice to Will Brooks, lost to Brent Primus, got knocked out in the first round by a featherweight moving up, and Patricio Pitbull Friere, had a split decision with a really aging Benson Henderson, who wasn't really competitive in the UFC anymore when he moved to Bellator. One of the things I know is that Michael Chandler has struggled historically with taller fighters. Four of the five losses that came in that 9-5 run are against fighters 5'10 or taller. Especially Will Brooks, who was almost 6 feet tall. Well, get 6 feet tall fighting at 155, Dan Hooker. So we have a younger fighter in Hooker, a guy who's fought a much more, at least recently, a level of competition that Chandler's just never seen, at least not since the Eddie Alvarez days in Bellator. They just don't have that much depth at light him to face the type of fighters that he's going to face in the UFC. So now he's going to have height disadvantages, reach disadvantages. And while he's only 33 years old, Michael Chandler is a guy who's been in too many wars and had too many injuries. And if you watch Michael Chandler versus Eddie Alvarez one, and now watch Michael Chandler versus Benson Henderson or Brent Primus or some of his more recent fights, this is not the same Michael Chandler anymore. We have we have all the size advantages, which historically have given Chandler trouble with lesser competition. Now with a guy who's at the top of his game, I think Dan Hooker at minus 125 is a steal. And I think the only reason the fight is priced that low is because of the name value with Michael Chandler. I don't think the UFC wanted him to fight this fight. There's a reason they had him the alternate for the Khabib versus Justin Gaethje fight in case one of them pulled out, because Michael Chandler's a big name. Then they wanted him to fight Tony Ferguson, but Ferguson didn't want to wait for, you know, for the new year, so he went ahead and fought Oliveira and lost. Poirier was already booked versus McGregor. I think the UFC really just ran out of options for Michael Chandler. They probably didn't want this guy to come over and get starched in his first fight. But just from a pure handicap perspective, this is the exact type of fighter that Michael Chandler has always struggled with throughout his career. I don't see it being any different here at this point in Chandler's career. I think Hooker gets it done in a time way Saturday night.
All right. Quite the emphatic play. I like it. Very, very thorough, very solid, and very with a lot of conviction on that one. So I applaud you across the board, even before they step into the octagon. So you have two more plays for our audience. Let's go with your Frivola. It's a little bit of an underdog here.
Yeah, again, we just talked about the size issues in the Michael Chandler fight. Another situation here, if we thought Michael Chandler at 5'8" was short for the lightweight division, Otman Azatar, the German fighter, is only 5'7", one of the shortest lightweights I've ever seen. Yet somehow he's 13-0 with 10 knockouts in his career. It's amazing that he's been able to sustain that level of success thus far, because what we've rarely seen throughout the history of the UFC, and you can really go back a long way, is guys that are massively undersized for their weight divisions having a lot of success in that division or sustained long-term success. That's why these guys go through such rigorous weight cuts. You know, that's why they lose 25 pounds in a week, because those advantages are so important in the octagon. To have a guy 5'7" fighting it at lightweight at 155 pounds, at some point, I just don't know how that doesn't become such a detriment to him that he's not able to consistently compete. And thus far, the results have been good, but they're limited. Two fights in the UFC against very limited competition. In both cases, he was able to get the KO. But on the other side, we have a guy in Matt Frivola. He trains at a great gym in UFC and Gracie Tampa South down there with Billy Quarantillo and some other UFC fighters. And the level of competition between these two guys, vastly different. You know, Frivola's been in there with Lando Venata. He beat Luis Pena, who is one of the most hyped prospects there is. He beat Jalen Turner, who is this huge 155-pounder, who is also a big knockout puncher. Frivola has a great ground game. His striking game is improving. He trains at a great gym. And again, he is going to have big time height, reach, and size advantages in this fight. At some point, I think those size disadvantages catch up with Azater as his level of competition increases. And I think plus 150 presents a lot of value on Matt, the steamroller Frivola.
Yeah, great nickname. I was going to wait for you to drop it. I was going to drop it if you didn't. Fantastic nickname. So, yeah, you're picking the first loss for Azatar there. But like you said, obviously a brief experience. Okay, you are Mr. Totals, so we can't let you out of here without a solid play on a total, and you have one in the prelims.
Yeah, and I don't always love laying juice on a total, but Khalil Roundtree, Marcin Prachnio, under 1.5 rounds, you're probably going to have to lay between $1.40 and $1.55 and juice on this one. But I just don't know how it doesn't go under here. So Khalil Roundtree now has 8 fights in the UFC, or 9. He's 4-4-1 in those 9 fights. 3 of his wins are by first round knockout. 3 of his 4 losses are also by first round finish. This is a guy who 6 of his 9 fights in the UFC didn't make it out of round 1. And on the other side with Prachniau, it's even worse. This is a guy who never makes it out of round 1. 7 of his last 8 fights have failed to make it out of round 1. And even worse for Prachniau is he's 0-3 in the UFC with 3 straight first round KO losses. His chin isn't holding up. He doesn't seem to be competitive at the UFC level, and he's not even making it a couple of minutes. And Khalil Roundtree is a kill or be killed in 3 minutes type of fighter. He goes out there and leaves it all on the line and either knocks you out or gets knocked out in the first 3 minutes. I actually think this fight is probably priced right because of the level of competition difference. You know, Roundtree's been in there with the likes of Johnny Walker, Ion, Hulk Kudalaba, Gokhan Saki, Paul Craig, Tyson Pedro, Eric Anders, all big ranked light heavyweights at the time. And he's won some and lost some. But the one thing that remains consistent is those fights end quick. I think Khalil Roundtree is probably going to get a knockout here within the first 2 minutes. But rather than lay minus 300, let's just go under 1.5 rounds, minus 150.
Okay. So maybe some get some round props as well in there as we get closer to the weekend and they get posted. Maybe get a specific action there and get a little bit more payout if you like the side as well. All right, my friend, good to be back on the horse, and should be a great card this weekend. Obviously, an exciting main event with such intrigue surrounding Conor McGregor and the unknown. Expect the unknown, unexpected, right? That's the way to approach McGregor. But appreciate you getting on here and give us in your thoughts.
Thanks, as always, Doug. It's a pleasure to be back. Happy New Year to everybody. Best of luck this weekend. Take care.
All right, you got it, bud.
Nobody has ever bet enough on a winning horse.
All right, really great stuff. Thanks to Matthew Holt, as always, giving his breakdown of the card. And it was really fun, like during a fight card with the fight night going on right now over on Fight Island. Of course, thanks to Ariel Helwani. Really fun chatting all things, not just the MMA world, but also the football world as well. So a big part of Bill's Mafia. So he obviously has a lot going on this weekend, able to space it all out as he did the juggling act last weekend on Saturday, but obviously the action will be on both days. So go check out the main event and everything else on the fight card this weekend from Abu Dhabi. And we'll check back with Mr. Executive Director tomorrow for the NFL podcast. We'll also have some analysis from one of our analysts. So thanks to everyone for downloading, rating, reviewing all the fun stuff. And we'll see you back here tomorrow.